This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
We'd like to know what do organizers say they hope to accomplish?
They mostly awareness, as usual. A lot of the speeches were talking about workers' rights because, as they pointed out, they're being stripped left and right as the corporate control gets their hands over everything more and more. Workers' rights, immigration rights, and, you know, they're making the case that no person is illegal.
Okay. If people are hearing this and want to join the march, is there still time to do that?
Yes, I don't know the exact route, and I don't know where they're planning on ending, but, yeah, there's a large group of us, and it's not going to disperse soon. So, yeah, come on down, especially if you're downtown, and you see the group, wave and then jump on in.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Again, we've been speaking with KBOO reporter Jolino live from downtown Portland at the May Day March for Workers and Immigrant Rights.
The Service Employees International Union, along with allied organizations, launched over 150 protests and rallies today calling for immigration reform. Eliseo Medina, SEIU Treasurer Secretary, said that most Americans want a bill that paves a road to citizenship without onerous obstacles. The rallies and protests come just before the debate on the proposed Border Security, Economic Opportunity, and Immigration Modernization Act. Arguments will begin as early as next week in the Senate. The bill, written by its own Gang of Eight, which includes Arizona Senator John McCain, would allow 11 million undocumented workers currently living in the U.S. to become citizens in 13 years. While the SEIU does not agree with all of the bill's provisions, Immigrant Justice Campaign Field Director Ben Montesoro thinks comprehensive immigration reform with a well-defined path to citizenship is a step in the right direction. KBOO's Ben Renner spoke with Monteroso about the day of action today happening across the country.
What are some of the participants doing and where is this happening?
Well, first of all, it's over 105 events the last time that we counted. The things are coming up, the movement is growing. And what we are seeing is an enthusiastic group of people demanding and demonstrating the support for immigration reform. I just coming from the rally that we had, a rally march that we had in downtown Los Angeles, one of the three that are going to happen today. This is at 12 o'clock, and I estimated that it's about 20,000 people there, if not more. The main thing that I think that is happening nationwide is that communities saying enough is enough. We want immigration reform to move forward. We are glad that the Gang of Eight was able to produce a bill that we can work with, and we expect to get that bill out of the process on the Judiciary Committee next month, or actually this month, into the debate and discussion with the House, and hopefully get this bill to the President's hands as soon as possible.
What sort of specific common sense immigration reforms are the SEIU and allied organizations rallying for today?
Well, the main thing that we want to make sure is that the 11 million undocumented individuals in this country have bad legalization and citizenship, family reunification, workers' rights, and so that is what we are rallying for and making sure that elected officials, in this case, specifically the Senate, understand that that is what our demands are.
What issues do you hope to raise before the debate of the new Senate immigration bill next week?
What we definitely concern is that we want to make sure that we protect the parts that we believe in the bill can benefit a lot of people, and want to make sure that doesn't get changed. Want to make sure that we can need to understand more why do we need to wait 13 years, and there's concerns about the timing in terms of the people qualifying for this. So it's December 2011. So those are some of the issues that we expect to bring up during the process. Next week is just the beginning. We are fully aware that it's going to be 16 days negotiating and going back and forth, where our community needs to continue supporting and showing the support for this process, and hopefully we can make those changes that we need and protect those things that we need to have.
And I'm sorry, where did you say you were headed off to right now?
I'm going to Phoenix right now for another activity that is happening later today over there, one of many. As you probably know, Arizona is one of those states that For now, we have two of the Gang of Eight, Mr. McCain and Senator McCain and Senator Flake. So we want to continue making sure that they know that we totally support their leadership, and making sure that they also understand that there are some things that we have concerns that I hope they address in the process. This is the beginning process. I hope that the American public, as well as those who support our issue, continue being engaged, because this is just going to get more excited. It's not over until the president signs, and we expect that process to take care of this year before September, if possible.
This is Ben Renner with KBOO News.
Public officials in Multnomah County are meeting this week to negotiate the funding subsidy for a Hyatt Hotel planned to be constructed at the Oregon Convention Center. The proposed hotel will have 600 rooms and will be constructed on the grounds of the Convention Center on Northeast Martin Luther King Boulevard in Portland. The private developers of the hotel will receive a 30-year rebate on the state lodging tax. The regional metro government is currently lobbying to receive up to $15 million in state development funds and $8 million from the Portland Development Commission. Taxpayers could be required to pay up to $36 million for the new hotel. The project has already faced opposition from service workers who are currently involved in a labor dispute with Hyatt for their treatment of maids and janitors.
The Portland School Board is holding a public meeting this evening to lay out its proposed budget for the upcoming school year. The budget was announced 2 weeks ago by Superintendent Carol Smith and was immediately met by criticism from parents and teachers concerned about proposed cuts. Smith proposed a budget of $466 million, but that amount has not yet been finalized. Budget cuts mean that many high school students will continue to have incomplete schedules, which parents say is unacceptable. After criticism from parents, Smith added 11 teachers back into the budget, but many local parents say that that is not enough. When the funding from an arts tax due May 15th comes in, the city will have a better idea of how much money they have to work with. But even after the arts money is accounted for, extensive budget cuts are still in the works for Portland Public Schools. Tonight's hearing will be at 6 p.m. at the district office on 501 North Dixon Street.
A new report by the Associated Press has found that California's prison system spends far more on antipsychotic drugs than other states with large prison systems. Antipsychotics account for nearly 20% of the pharmaceuticals purchased for the state prison system. Following lawsuits claiming that antipsychotic drugs were used to discipline and punish inmates, the California State Legislature passed a bill last year requiring the consent of inmates before they are given drugs. California's poor treatment of inmates with mental health problems prompted a federal court takeover of that operation nearly 20 years ago. Federal judges then ordered the prison population sharply reduced to improve prisoner care. This week, the state's petition to regain control of its prison mental health system was rejected by a federal judge who stated that California prison officials continue to violate constitutional standards.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Free Speech Radio News at 5:30, followed by Treasures from the KBOO Archives at 6 o'clock, Audio Gems from the KBOO Vault. At 7 o'clock, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is going to be gorgeous, clear and sunny, with a high of 77 degrees.
It's 5:13 in the post-meridian. Time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Gosh, it seems like only yesterday that we saw George W. on TV reading The Pet Goat to some second graders. But now, he's all grown up and has an entire super-duper king-size library filled with big books and other neat stuff, all dedicated to him. Bush's Pharaonic Presidential Center is now open, allowing us commoners to dig deep into the shallowness of his achievements. The enormous building itself sets the tone, sharp edges, high brick walls, and the welcoming feel of a fortress. Yet, the ex-pres insists that it's a place for public contemplation of his legacy. Quote, a place to lay out facts. How ironic is that? After all, the Bush-Cheney regime was infamous for its disregard of facts, as well as its constant hiding, twisting, and wholesale manufacturing of facts to fool the people. On everything the regime pushed, from going to war over Iraq's non-existent weapons of mass destruction, to its plan to gut and privatize Social Security, facts were whatever Bush, Cheney, Rummey, Rove, and Condi imperiously declared them to be. More ironic, and even insulting, is the centerpiece of the library's attempt to whitewash George's 8 awful years, an interactive exhibit called Decision Points Theater. And theater it is, portraying George heroically as the decider on such big moments as Hurricane Katrina and the Wall Street collapse. Visitors to this rigged exhibit can use touchscreens to see Bush getting contradictory advice, then taking a bold stand. The whole show is meant to make you feel sympathy for him. Then you're asked to vote on whether he did the right thing. Again, irony. We the people got no vote on these issues back when it would have mattered. This is Jim Hightower saying George's library is as big a fraud as his presidency was.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Over 5,000 children's products with hazardous chemicals were detailed in a report published today by the Washington Toxics Coalition. The report listed products on the shelves at retailers such as Walmart, Gymboree, Hallmark, Gap, and H&M from June to March of this year. Chemicals cited such as mercury, cobalt, and BPA have been linked to various health problems, including cancer. The report data was compiled using information made available by a Washington state law that requires manufacturers to disclose the use of chemicals. Oregon currently has no requirement for manufacturers to disclose chemicals, but there is possible legislation in the works. KBOO's Jemai Cherry spoke with Sarah Petras of the Oregon Environmental Council about this report.
So the report released today by the Oregon Environmental Council, the Washington Toxics Coalition, and Safer States reveals critical information on toxic chemicals in children's products that have been reported to the Washington State Department of Ecology.
So what are some of these products?
Some of the products covered by the legislation in Washington include children's toys, children's jewelry, and cosmetics that are designed for children.
Can you give a scenario of some of the possible dangers?
Well, some of the products were reported to contain heavy metals, chemicals that are toxic used in plastics, as well as volatile organic compounds. All of the data that has been collected in Washington is available publicly. They have a database online that consumers and health officials can access.
What are some of the, I guess, medical risks that are associated with those chemicals?
Well, it's hard to say what health effects are associated with exposure to these chemicals. In Oregon, we're currently not yet tracking this information like Washington is, but we do have a bill in the legislature under consideration right now called the Toxics Disclosure for Healthy Kids Act, and it's House Bill 3162, and this would require manufacturers of children's products to report to the Oregon Health Authority, similar as these companies are reporting in Washington, to help us understand where, when, and how toxics are found in kids' products here in Oregon. So once we have that information, it will enable Oregon Health Authority to determine what those health risks are. People generally want to know what they can do about this, and I think the first thing people can do is sign our petition at oeconline.org.
Do you know what the status of that bill is right now?
Well, the bill just passed out of the Health Care Committee, and it has bipartisan support and is now resting within the Ways and Means Committee. So we're really excited about the momentum that this bill has. Oregon has a chance to take action with this bill, and you can find out more about what you can do as a citizen at Oregon Environmental Council's website, oeconline.org.
That was KBOO's Jemai Cherry speaking with Sarah Petras of the Oregon Environmental Council.
An open meeting between U.S. nuclear energy regulators and concerned citizens groups will address the American use of reactors identical to those that failed in the Japanese Fukushima disaster in 2011. More than 2,500 co-petitioners are calling for the emergency closure of all General Electric Mark I and II boiling water reactors out of concerns that similar failures could occur. Containment structures for nuclear reactors are required to be leak-tight, according to the anti-nuclear power organization Beyond Nuclear. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the governing body for all nuclear energy sites in the U.S., conducted its own study of all Mark I and II reactors following the Fukushima meltdown. NRC staff recommended that all reactor operators should be immediately required to install new radiation filters on their venting systems. The majority of NRC commissioners rejected their own organization's recommendations and instead lowered the proposed standard. But even the lower standard has not yet been enforced because the commission also voted in favor of an indefinite delay in enforcement. Tomorrow's meeting will be broadcast live in a toll-free telephone conference call and simultaneous webcast by the agency from 1 to 3 on Thursday afternoon at nrc.gov.
The U.S. Justice Department has issued a new set of national guidelines for forensic medical examinations in cases of sexual assault. Techniques for analyzing evidence in rape cases and understanding of the psychological effects of sexual assault on the victim have evolved tremendously over the past decade. There are, however, still a wide range of procedures used by those involved in the treatment, policing, prosecution, and defense of this crime. The new guidelines are intended to help ensure a set standard for care when rape victims seek help. While the standards will be voluntary in public and private institutions, they will be mandatory in federal prisons and the military. In the latter situations, the victim's physical and emotional needs will take precedence over criminal justice considerations. The proposed changes have been represented by analysts as a response to the poor performance of military and prison institutions to claims of rape or sexual assault in these environments.
This afternoon, Maine became the 13th state to call for a constitutional amendment to overturn the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in Citizens United versus the Federal Election Commission. The Maine resolution says that the Citizens United decision disproportionately elevates the role of wealthy special interests in elections and diminishes the voices and influence of ordinary Americans. Maine's vote comes less than a month after West Virginia passed a similar resolution to overturn Citizens United. Oregon, Illinois, Minnesota, Delaware, and New Hampshire are among the other states currently considering actions calling for an amendment. New Hampshire is now the only state in New England that has not yet joined the growing chorus against the Supreme Court decision. State-level actions are meant to pressure the U.S. Congress, where Senate Republicans are blocking all resolutions from being debated. The other states that have called for an amendment to overturn Citizens United include West Virginia, Colorado, Montana, California, Rhode Island, Maryland, Vermont, New Mexico, and Hawaii, as well as Washington, D.C. Nearly 500 local municipalities have called for a constitutional amendment, including Portland.
In the latest news from U.S.-occupied Afghanistan, Taliban soldiers killed a senior member of the Afghan Peace Council today, further stalling already tenuous peace talks. Malim Shawali was part of the 70-member peace council set up by Hamid Karzai in 2010 to settle a peace agreement with the Taliban. Shawali, the Peace Council's chief of the southern province of Helmand, was traveling to a particularly violent district when his envoy was ambushed by Taliban troops. Helmand is the largest producer of opium in Afghanistan and has been the site of the worst violence between the Taliban and NATO-led forces. British government officials are looking into how three soldiers were killed in a heavily armored Mastiff vehicle by an improvised explosive device earlier this week. The Mastiff is designed to protect soldiers from roadside mines and bombs. British officials believe the Taliban is adapting to the Mastiff's heavy armor by using larger, more powerful bombs.
And And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.imemc.org for Wednesday, May 1st, 2013. Settlers attack a village in the West Bank and injure a civilian, while in Gaza, a fisherman injured by Israeli gunfire. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. A Palestinian man was injured in the central West Bank city of Ramallah on Wednesday during clashes between Palestinian residents and armed Israeli settlers, local sources reported. Armed settlers invaded the village of Betello near Ramallah and ransacked residents' cars and homes. When residents tried to stop the settlers' attacks, Israeli soldiers arrived and escorted the settlers out of the village after a local man was injured, witnesses reported. In northern West Bank, Israeli settlers attacked on Wednesday morning Palestinian cars near Nablus city. According to Palestinian residents, settlers from the illegal Israeli settlement of Yitzhar near Nablus threw stones at Palestinian cars driving at the main Nablus road. At least a dozen cars sustained damage, but no injuries were reported. In the Gaza Strip, a Palestinian fisherman was injured when Israeli Navy gunboats attacked Palestinian fishing boats in northern Gaza Strip. According to local sources, the Palestinian boats were sailing in a distance of 1 nautical mile offshore. The injured fisherman was identified as Adil Becker, 50 years old. He was moved to a hospital with moderate wounds. On Tuesday night, the Israeli Air Force fired at least 2 missiles into an area believed to be used as a training center for the Popular Resistance Committees, northwest of Rafah City in the southern part of the Gaza Strip. Local sources reported that the Air Force bombarded the Ansirat camp, leading to excessive damage but no injuries. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Wednesday, May 1st news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hossam Kassis and me, Dassam Bannoura.
You are listening to the KABU Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jemiah Sherry and Evan Owens Stevoy. The producer is Ben Renner. Special thanks to live reporter Joe Lino. Our engineer, cool under pressure, is Kurt Lauer. The KABU Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. And Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, on K264AA in Corvallis at 100.7 FM, and on K220HR in Hood River at 91.9 FM. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And I'm Nia Lewis. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on Voices from the Edge, host Joanne Hardesty interviews David Cobb of Move to Amend about the democracy convergence at Portland Community College this weekend. At 9, hear Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know, with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Per Fogering speaks with Michael Clare about how the two trends of growing resource scarcity and climate change are creating a formula for future disruption, social unrest, state collapse, and, in the long run, catastrophe. At 10, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Jennifer Kemp interviews Ali Liebgott about her new novel, Cha-Ching, a story of what it means to be young and broke in America. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, Clinton Galloway discusses his book, Anatomy of a Hustle, Cable Comes to South Central L.A., the story of two brothers settling out to better their community by establishing the first Black-owned cable franchise in the country. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. And stay tuned now for more national and international news from the Worker Run Collective at Free Speech Radio News. Have a lovely evening.
Station Navigators Report, April 30th, 2013. Some of you have heard me talk about the need for change at KBOO and why we find ourselves at this crossroads. You may have also heard some of the actions underway to set KBOO on a course towards long-term stability and sustainability. Change is hard, filled with emotion, and requires doing things that are challenging and difficult. But the potential for KBOO to better fulfill our mission and support the evolving needs of our diverse neighborhoods is within our reach. The KBOO Foundation Board of Directors has called a meeting to discuss the current changes at KBOO, provide historic context for the problems we are facing, and provide details of how I, the station navigator, intend to maximize financial resources, build needed infrastructure, and create the foundation for future stability and growth. If you care about KBOO and are interested in hearing details of the plans underway, straight from the horse's mouth, you are invited to attend this conversational meeting. There will be ample time for questions and answers. It takes place Saturday, May 4th, 1 to 4 p.m., Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. Thanks, and I hope to see you there.
This is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, May 1st, 2013. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, protesters mark International Workers' Day in cities across the U.S. and around the world. We'll go to New York, where activists call for immigrant rights and better conditions for restaurant workers. Seattle, Washington, where activists have cited FBI surveillance and much criticized police tactics. And Istanbul, Turkey, where unions and activists defied a protest ban and were met with tear gas and arrests. Those stories and more coming up.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for FSRN. Today is May Day, and worker advocates around the world held rallies and marches demanding labor and human rights. In Pakistan, less than 2 weeks ahead of much-anticipated national elections, a new leftist coalition held May Day rallies across the country. FSRN's Umar Farooq reports from Islamabad.
Supporters of the Awami Workers' Party marched through the capital, Islamabad, chanting slogans calling for global worker solidarity and commemorating Chicago's Haymarket Massacre, believed to be the genesis of May Day labor mobilizations. The Awami Workers' Party was formed last November as an alliance of three leftist parties. It's fielding dozens of candidates in the upcoming national elections, promising a stronger federal government, nationalization, land reforms, protections for organized labor and women, and an end to American drone strikes. This is a similar platform that first brought the incumbent Pakistan People's Party to power 4 decades ago. Rights groups believe there are up to 8 million people, including a large number of children, working as unpaid bonded laborers in Pakistan. The Awami Workers Party is different from the Awami National Party, which has been subject to continued threats and attacks from Taliban militants. The Taliban has largely left the Awami Workers Party alone. Umar Farooq, FSRN, Islamabad.
President Evo Morales says Bolivia will expel USAID, the U.S. government organization involved in economic and social development activities abroad. In a May Day rally today, Morales accused the U.S. of using USAID to undermine the Bolivian government. Earlier this month, WikiLeaks published a 2006 U.S. diplomatic cable that outlines the U.S. government's attempts, through the work of USAID, to weaken then-Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. Other Central and South American countries, including Ecuador and Nicaragua, have made steps towards kicking out the U.S. agency for trying to destabilize legitimate governments. Newly released satellite images obtained by Human Rights Watch reveal more than 2,000 Nigerian homes were destroyed during a raid on militants in the northern town of Baga. Some witnesses say the military attack in mid-April left more than 200 people dead. FSRN's Samuel Okocha reports from Lagos.
Baga residents say soldiers descended on the town after Islamist militants with Boko Haram attacked a military patrol, killing a soldier. According to community leaders interviewed by Human Rights Watch, soldiers burned 2,000 homes in the fishing community. Human Rights Watch says satellite images corroborate these accounts. Nigeria's military high command says far fewer houses were burned and those fires were triggered by Boko Haram weapons. The government also said only 6 civilians died in the fighting. The Nigerian government announced Tuesday that the country's Human Rights Commission would visit the community to carry out an independent investigation. Samuel Okocha, FSRN, Lagos.
The U.S. attorney in Massachusetts says 3 men have been arrested in connection with the Boston Marathon bombing. They were scheduled to appear in court this afternoon. The men are being charged with consp-